from the University of Wisconsin Environmental Research Center, yes, is going to talk to us.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for sticking with us to the end here. I would like to say that I work as part of a team at University of Wisconsin. We have Vikram Kundinya here in the audience. He's an evaluator with us, and some grad student evaluators, and another woman, Kim Keyes, who couldn't be here today. But it is a big project, and Linda, as a social scientist leading it, and a lot of other people on the team as well, really value evaluation, and therefore we've had the chance to implement a really comprehensive plan, unlike a lot of other projects that we work with. So what you'll see here, I think, is comprehensive in nature, and might be a little surprising in terms of what you generally see in terms of evaluation. Linda presented this earlier. Really, our goal is to create products that are useful and used. And stakeholder interaction, this sort of iterative product, what we've also called co-production, has been extremely key in having products that will actually get used. So this is something that we call our outcomes banner. How many people in here have heard of or used a logic model? Otto says, unfortunately. Yeah, about half or more of you raised your hand. So what we did, well, one thing we did early in the project was to do a really detailed version. So we fully understood what our logic was, which helps the evaluator say, did that logic hold true? What went well? What didn't go well? How can we improve it? But what we did here is we focused on that right-hand column of the logic model. And you could kind of translate into short, medium, and long term. But what we said is, really we're focused on actions here. You know, it's going to be hard for us to measure the vision, although we're going to get at that a little bit with our end of project evaluation. And just focusing on educational isn't enough. So what do we need to do to get to actions? And the team brainstormed that we have to do those six things, or we have to achieve those six things that are listed under educational. And that's what we need to work towards in this outreach phase. So when we've been doing marketing, we've been trying to do things that increase trust in our products. You know, make sure university logos are included, things like that. We don't just need to build awareness of our products, but we need to make sure they're relevant to people. And some of those other bullet points speak to the relevance. How does this fit into decisions? And if it does fit into my decisions, is it valuable? You know, even if I see how it maybe fits. And of course, people have to have the ability to use the tools. So doing the hands-on training session this afternoon is one example of something we learned is that talks like this can help increase awareness and actually have led to a lot of important outcomes for the project. But what we heard from people when we evaluated those is they really needed hands-on time. Not surprisingly, right? But it's something that's harder to do, and therefore it's easier for the team to say, oh, you know, we couldn't do those hands-on ones as frequently. So we're trying to get those done as much as possible. And again, our target audience is really, we say primarily ag advisors, but ultimately farmers, and farmers are also a direct target audience as well. So real quick, sort of the, my theory, not theory, but outlook on evaluation for the project is we're not the type of people that come in at the end and check up on everybody and say, did it go well or not? We've been involved throughout the process to actually try to increase the project's impact. Not that we're responsible for it, but we're on the teams, we're on certain teams within the project, presenting data at monthly meetings and trying to talk about how can we fill in gaps, whether it's states that haven't been reached as much as other states, or whatever it is, just trying to get, you know, whether it's trying to do more hands-on versus presentation style formats, whether it's evaluating the team itself. So we've done interviews with the team. It's a huge team, 50 people. I think you've heard from the talk today, it's very interdisciplinary, right? And I think that those projects have a huge chance to be successful because of their interdisciplinary nature, but it means that everyone has to work together well. And so one role we've played, which might seem a little odd, is actually interviewing the team and reporting those results back to the PI and the project manager, who already have a good sense of what's going well and not well. But sometimes people are more willing to disclose something when we're not reporting their name and when they feel like they can just kind of tell it to an external person, even though we're sort of internal to the team as well. And what they've said is that, I'm going to skip a, I'll say it when I get to that slide. I feel like my slides are a little out of order now. They've said that that has been hugely important. So it's not just about evaluating outcomes among the target audience, but the team, so that the team can be successful to have impact. And then, of course, there is a piece of what we call summative evaluation, which is actually going in at the end and seeing, you know, how many farmers and advisors are using these across the region. Are they using them in decision making? If they have been using them in decision making, what has that resulted in? Positive impacts, et cetera. So when we talk about evaluation, again, we're talking about multiple different stakeholders, the team, potential users of our products, actual users of our project, of our products. I talked about the evaluation of the team already. So what are we doing around evaluating the deliverables or the decision support tools? We've got a couple different methods here. So we work with a company called usertesting.com. And generally, before a tool is launched, and even after it's launched, when we're trying to refine it, we work with usertesting.com. They have a million or so testers that sign up and get paid to do testing. And what you can do is set up screening questions and say, I only want people that have occupations closely tied to the farming industry to answer these questions. Or I only want people who work in these 12 states and say that they're a farmer to answer these questions. And the beautiful thing about it is that you get a video back of them using your product. So we also do another way of user testing, which is at events kind of like this, we ask people, do you want to sign up to be a tool tester? So we now have a database of tool testers that we really consider are experts. So not this big database of a million people that gets paid to do it, but this separate group of, we really know they're our target audience. But to do user testing with them, we have to create an online survey. They have to go to the tool, test it, click back to the survey, type their answers in, which is valuable as well. But with usertesting.com, you get a video of them using it. So you can really see, like, where are people struggling, which questions that we're asking of them, because you set up activities and prompts for them to go through. They're not just totally let loose on it, although you could do that if you wanted to. It's just really insightful to see them actually using the product, I guess is my point. And this, I'm not going to actually play this, but this is when we did a test of the Growing Degree Days to see how it was working on tablets, for example. That's one reason we might do user testing. And I've just got some bullet points at the bottom there. I won't read them. We have actually made changes based on this. So it has been useful. And some of them seem subtle. So if you're working on something that you think could benefit from user testing, but you're scared that it could totally derail you, or you know, you'd have to spend a lot of money to make the changes or whatever, some of them are just slight tweaks that greatly improve the experience, right? So we haven't actually made any changes that are huge. One thing we do is, this was actually for USDA, this was an accountability thing, but we have an online version of it that's used for decision making as we roll out the project. It's just a map showing where the outreach events have been. So Hans and Dennis and others in the room and on the team that aren't here have been working really hard to go get the word out. Usually we're at existing meetings of producers and advisors, figuring that they're already there, so let's go talk to them where they're already at. Some are hands-on, some are not. We've also done some webinars. But this shows you where the outreach has been, and this one's a little bit outdated now. We now have over 115 events across the region and growing. And we've been working hard to fill in some gaps, like Wisconsin, for example, trying to reach out to some people in Ohio. And again, the online version of this we've been using on some of our team calls to say, where are the gaps and what can we do to address those? Whereas this was something that USDA was pretty impressed with and we just submitted to them. We do have this little outreach event checklist. It's basically, I think what it drives home is that we do have a process we're trying to follow. So we do try to evaluate the events. We try to make sure that folks like Hans and Dennis are passing around a sign-in sheet, which seems simple, but it allows you to re-engage with those people and let them know about updates to the tools. For example, when the split nitrogen tool just went from 4 or 5 states to 12 states, that's something I would think people would want to know about. And we do track outreach events using something called smartsheet.com. It's basically a glorified Excel, but what it allows us to do is share it across the region instead of sending this document back and forth, and then we can keep track of all the events that then get mapped onto this and used for other purposes as well. This is an example of what we present monthly to part of the team based on the survey results, the surveys that are done at these events. So in general, what we're measuring here are intentions, because we're serving people right after they learned about the project. So that's all we can do, really. So that bar graph on top basically says that 79% of people that have attended these events say that they are likely or very likely to use at least one of the decision support tools in their work in the next year. So that's the overall finding in terms of intention and likelihood to use the tools. And these are very diverse audiences that we're surveying here. What's shown on the right there is that about half of people say that they've ever used a decision support tool with climate information, but 90-some percent say that they would be willing to. So I thought that was really positive, because I think some people think, oh, people don't use technology, they're not gonna use this. And what we have at the bottom, I'm not gonna go through it, but it's basically some summaries of interest. So what percentage of people wanna receive the educational resources, which consist of PowerPoints going through all of the tools in detail. So if you're an extension educator and you wanna go teach other people about the tools, we've got all that stuff on our website, and we call it a sales kit or an educational resources kit. We want to make it easy to promote the train the trainer aspect. So 85% of those who've come to these events and filled out a survey said that they will spread the word about the U2U decision support tools. And we have hundreds that have signed up for one of these educational resources kits. This is just one example of something we share with the outreach folks. So Chad Hart from Iowa did an event, and Vikram in the audience here pulls together the Google Analytics from the website at that location, in this case Iowa, around those dates. So it's kind of just nice to see, I think, if you're the one doing the presentations. And we're pretty sure it's due to the presentation, right? Sometimes the thing with big data is you never know what it's due to. When we look at the analytics of the whole project over, say, a month, sometimes it can be harder, but when you drill down to that state for those dates, it's kind of nice to see those increases. At least people are going to the site when they're hearing about it. What we don't know yet is the quality of what happens next, which will be addressed at the end of the project. And then to increase our reach, we've also been working with a media company, which this was not planned, but we ended up finding some money to do it. We've been sending out postcards and emails to various ag advisors and farmers across the region. This is an example of the one advertising the split nitrogen tool that just went out last month. And we've been doing it quarterly, so this is the third one. There's going to be one more. The last one will be sometime in early 2016. It goes out to 10 to 20,000 people each time. And we're trying to hit the same people each time because our marketing people say that's a good thing, to reach the same people multiple times rather than reaching brand new people every time. This is just an example of a quick bar chart that shows the success of the campaign among different types of people we advertise to. So Ag Extension and CCAs were having the best outcomes in terms of those that actually opened the email. This is only statistics for the email portion because we can't really do much with the postcard version in terms of evaluation yet. So this might not seem super impressive. We've got around 30% of people in Extension and CCAs who receive the email that are actually opening it, and 4 to 6% who are clicking on it, which takes them to the website where they can use the tool. However, this is a good deal better than other companies that are doing similar marketing. So our goal was to get over a 23% open rate based on other statistics from companies and others that are doing this type of marketing. And you can see with those two audiences, we're getting 30. Don't pay attention to the SWCS one. That has a really low sample size. And then you can see for TSPs, technical service providers, and conservation district staff, those second to last and third to last bars, we're seeing a little bit lower. And one reason we're doing this is so that we can make better decisions about our contact list. Even though we're trying to kind of keep the list the same, we are making slight tweaks. So for round four, if we have to decide which people to send it to, I would say we might want to take off TSPs and NACD. You know, if we have to make that call, this gives us some data to help make that decision. Linda, how am I in time? 1 minute. Okay, good. I'm almost done. So I just want to pull this up one more time to talk for a second about the long-term evaluation. So we are planning to do some similar things to what Linda described were done at the beginning of the project. So a random sample survey of farmers across the region, reserving the advisors across the region, including everybody that we consider our cohort, so everybody that's signed up at these events that are at that are on our quarterly e-newsletter list, et cetera, to get at real outcomes beyond attention, you know, actual use of the decision support tools in decision making, and then what happened as a result of that. Also, just if they're using climate information to a higher degree in general, it doesn't have to be our DSTs. We've said that that's sort of another outcome of our project. Oops, wrong button. And I actually stole this slide from the project manager, Melissa Woodhelm, but the take-home messages here are the idea of stakeholder engagement throughout the process if we want to be successful versus saying up front, we're going to create these tools and we hope they'll be successful. Actually asking people what they want. Evaluation being built in from the beginning, big proponent of that, and actually being clear on what we're trying to achieve and how we think we are achieving that. And again, that it's not just an end of project exercise. Thank you.
I want to thank you all for coming today and sticking with us till the end. If you do need CEUs, the form is up here. We also have the sign-up sheet in the back. If you haven't signed it yet and would like to receive our quarterly newsletters and stay up to date on our tools, et cetera, please sign that. We have bookmarks. If you want to have the little nice little bookmark to put in your program, it also includes links to our tools. And don't forget our session this afternoon where you can actually experience the tools with Dennis and Hans over at the Hilton Symposium Ballroom 2. Close enough? Okay, 2:30 to 4:30. Roger. We did not cover that. Our plan is to transfer them to the regional climate centers, the Midwest Regional Climate Center and the High Plains Regional Climate Center. So they will have a life after our USDA NIFA funding goes away. So invest time in learning them because they will stick around. And you'll be able, the link will still get you there, agclimate4u.org will just redirect.